Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Good evening, dear listener. The Late Night Alternative. I'm Ian Lee. Who are you?
My name's Catherine Boyle.
Welcome, Kathleen.
Thanks.
Nice, Kathleen. It's nice to see you. 0344 499 1000 is the phone number. We've been saying this for ages, but he's here. Robbie Vincent's here. Hello, Robbie.
Good morning. Oh, no, it's good evening, isn't it? Good evening.
And we've got to say as well, your boy is here, Oliver. Nice to see you, Oliver.
Hello.
Oliver doesn't want to be on the show, guys, but he's in the studio.
The strange thing is, he's actually my daughter.
Okay.
He masquerades as my son.
Well, he masquerades very, very well.
No, he is
now,
my son.
Robbie, we tried to get you ages ago.
Yeah.
And then what then?
He was on his travels, he told me.
Oh, man.
Yeah, but there were other reasons. That was a near here, it was a pretty dramatic, wasn't it, and traumatic time, if you remember.
Yeah, yeah.
With London Bridge and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
And I was on the edge of travelling as well. And I thought that I'd go and travel, and then I hoped that you'd invite me back.
And we didn't, so you sent us an email.
That's right.
Saying, please, come on, guys, this.
I begged
booking.
You. I begged you. I said, I must get at least one night out.
Where did you go travelling?
India. India. Germany. One of the things I have done, I've doing the job that we do.
Yeah,
it gets in the way of travelling, and I just love travelling.
Yeah,
so I went back to India. Where else have I been? Cologne. I went there, and somewhere else which I can't.
How did you find India? Because I spent years in it.
On a map, actually.
Well, thank you very much. Turn left at Greenland.
No, no, no. Get on a plane. Who knows where he's going?
I struggled with India. I went and I enjoyed it. I went there on my honeymoon. I enjoyed it, but I felt, I don't know. I felt I'd done it. I don't need to go back.
I understand that completely.
Yeah.
But I did go the soft way,
yeah.
and the posh way with a small p. But I also got to see the bits that put people off.
Yeah.
Big time. And me being there, spending my money there, you know, the guy who was selling this and selling that might be a bit richer tomorrow because I bought something off him, mate. And that's the way I try.
Oh, no, exactly. I mean,
look at it now. They got more money than us,
isn't it? They're doing space missions.
I mean, you can't afford ice cream there anymore.
You can't. I did 20 years ago. I spent 3 months in Pakistan. Man alive, that was...
interesting.
That was an eye-opener. That was something. I was. It sounds like a joke. I was the body double for Christopher Lee in a movie that filmed in Pakistan. Imagine. And he told me off. There was only one set of clothes. And I had to keep going up to him. Christopher, can I have your clothes now? I'm going to be you. And I'm never forgetting Karachi. Over 100 degrees in the sun on a bus. Gosh. And it's just me and him, and he stood there in his underpants just laying into me. This is outrageous. You're coming to get these clothes. This is not what you... And I just had to go, I'm very sorry, Christopher. And just
you don't look anything like Christopher Lee.
I was tall and slim at the time. I'm still tall. I'm not slim now.
I was talking about travelling, and you that you reminded me. Who's the guy who plays Poldark?
Aidan Quinn. Flynn.
Jim. A ridiculously good-looking man.
Yeah.
I moved into an apartment by the sea, and there's a guy cooking. I thought, I'm not having this.
Yeah.
A barbecue, and I sort of went to this place, hoping to be totally alone. There's a guy having a barbecue, and there's a smell of the barbecue coming out. Oh. So I went out, and I said, oh, hi, I've moved in. I'm pleased to have a barbecue. When are you going to put it out? That sort of chat, you know? And I went back in, and I said to my wife, he's putting it out soon. And I said, you know who he is, don't you? He's the man who plays Poldark. Oh. She said, no, you're winding. I said, he is. It's the man who plays Poldark.
Aidan Turner.
Aidan Turner, like I said, yeah.
So off she toddles and looks out. And within 5 minutes, she's got her high heels on, a fantastic dress. And I said, so it wasn't Aidan Turner then? And it was. It was Aidan Turner. And a little while later, this guy walks by.
Yeah.
I'm sitting looking out. And you were talking about the clothes, dressed up as Poldark.
Yeah.
So I went out and said, it's the barbecue man dressed up as Poldark.
Why was he dressed up as Poldark?
Well, because they were filming there.
Right, okay.
Bay, you know.
He wasn't.
And he was in and we were watching the drones, which have all got a bad name.
Yes.
I mean, don't call yourself drone, whatever you do.
No.
But watching the drone go out, you know, and shooting all the film was quite amazing.
Yeah.
But it wasn't as good as your Christopher Lee story.
Thank you very much.
Like Christopher Lee.
But
so you were like a clothes peg.
Well, I was like a clothes peg. I was tall and slim. So I was the same height as Chris, as we called him. And they gave me a mask, a Christopher Lee mask to wear. Did you not know that?
No, I didn't know about the mask.
I had a prosthetic.
I just thought you were far away.
I was far away and out of focus. Quite often you'd see two Christopher Lees. You'd see him when he was alive and then him was supposed to be dead. And I was the guy in the background that was out of focus.
So did you have like a rubber mask, like Bo Selector?
Yes, I had a rubber mask.
Flipping heck.
Yeah, for Christopher Lee. Anyway, let's buy the bye. 0344 499 1000 if you want to give us a call. Robbie Vincent is here. Robbie Vincent, radio host, television host. And we were saying, and I'm just going to blow a little bit of smoke up your old Jaxi, if you don't mind. If you don't mind.
Blow a bit of smoke up the Jaxi.
It's a phrase.
Not an expression I recognise from the streets of Leeds, I must say.
It's just going to flatter you.
With great apologies to those of you who live in Scotland,
yes.
I don't know what blowing a bit of smoke up your Jaxi means. But
I'm going to say something nice about you. That's what
that's
it is.
Sweet.
You were one of the first, if not the first, late night radio phone-in host in this country. The first one? To do a full straight...
Yeah, I was a fairly rare animal, yeah.
Yeah.
And it was because there was no television. This is how it all started.
Yeah.
When television stopped, it shut down at 10 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
I just thought that I was employed by the BBC at the time as a radio journalist, and I just thought it'd be a good idea to have a programme and an opportunity for local BBC radio to have someone listening to it.
Yeah.
And I said it'd be a good idea, wouldn't it, to do a programme, and I ended up doing a phone-in show. And that's really was the birth of mass listen to phone-in radio, because people had nothing else to do.
You're responsible for LBC, so thanks a lot for that. You basically created that beast. That's a direct result. Was it as simple as that? Because we'll talk about the music. We're going to do this all out of order, if you don't mind. We'll talk about the music in a bit. But was it as simple as that? You just thought, maybe people phoning in for 3 or 4 hours.
Well, I was aware of phone-in radio in America.
Right.
And like you had an interest in radio per se.
Yeah.
And I just thought it was very strange that such a successful animal in America didn't live in the UK.
Yeah.
And I thought that the closing down of television was a perfect time to try it out. And to give the BBC total credit, they let me learn broadcasting live on air.
Wow.
Because I had very little broadcasting experience. But the phone-in thing is, in a way, run by the dear listener. How are you, dear listener? Good morning. Is run by the listener. Admittedly, if you get an idiot at the other end, it completely destroy it. But I think most people can be a good listener.
Yeah.
And I was an okay listener.
Yeah.
An okay listener. And I understood, being in London, what they were talking about. And I'd been there and been brought up in a similar way. And
did you get do you remember the first show? Did you get phone calls first show, or did you have to spend a little time coaxing them and training them?
The things I can remember were, I think it was called the GPO at the time. GPO at the time ran the phone system, and we just blew the local exchange up, literally.
Brilliant.
And, of course, they came along and said, no, this isn't possible. You can't have 25 people on the same line. We had 50 people. No, we're the GPO. And that's what it was like in those days. Complete nonsense.
Yeah.
We had We had the people listening to the programme and we had the people on the overloaded phone lines talking to each other, completely separate from the programme. That's how popular it was. Wow. People loved it.
Oh, so when they were off air, they were talking to each other.
Oh, yeah. There was I think it was the Robbie Vincent telephone show club that none of us heard. It was probably a darn sight more interesting than what I was doing with one-to-one with the dear.
And here's the thing,
listener.
With all the advances in technology, we've tried and we can't do it on this stupid system we got. That's too... They've made this system so good that you can't... We've tried to have people offline
speaking to each other. But they chat to each other on Twitter now, don't they?
They do, I suppose. Well, I tell you what, 0344 499 1000. Call in as if it were a normal show. Call in if you want to speak to Robbie specifically.
Don't be shy.
Robbie, say hello to Alan. We've got Alan Caddick.
Alan.
Hey, Robbie.
How are you, sir?
I remember the old jingle. Robbie Vincent attacking your rhythm buds.
Tickling your rhythm buds. Wow.
Is that one of your old jingles?
Yeah, something like that. And also shaking your bass bins. Do you remember that one?
Bring me back to the old Radio 1 day.
And mashing up your yard. Do you remember that one?
Oh, my. Yeah, I do, Robbie.
Hey. Gosh, that brings back. How are you?
Oh, not bad, Robbie. I've got a killer question for you.
What's that?
During your days of Radio 1, what was the most unusual thing to ever happen to you live on air?
Well, you were at Radio 1 for a while. A short
10 years.
While. Was it 10 years? You have 10 years at Radio 1?
Somebody interviewed me about... This is the truth. Somebody interviewed me last week or the week before about my time at Radio 1.
Yeah.
He was spooky. He knew more about me than I knew about myself.
There you go.
I was on Radio 1 for 10 years,
wow.
One slab of 10 years and one of two or three, and I did my last Radio 1 show was on the last day of the 80s. What about that?
There you go.
Yeah. What did you ask me a question before we were interrupted, dear listener? Oh, yes, the most unusual thing that had happened?
Yeah.
The most unusual thing that happened to me on Radio 1, nothing. Nothing unusual.
What do you mean unusual? Like someone, like a guest dying or something? Like, what do you mean?
Like an unexpected exclusive.
An unexpected exclusive. That's a... I don't know about you, Robbie. It all blends into one.
Yes, it does. I mean, I was looking forward to the... No, I won't. I won't. I won't. Because he's the sort of person that might send a lawyer's letter to me.
Uh-oh.
Ask me another question. Ask me something deeply personal.
Have you ever considered doing a Radio 1 road show?
Well, I'll tell you what. If I had the choice of going to jail or doing a Radio 1 road show, all right, guess which one I would choose?
Jail.
Yeah. You're right. I couldn't do a Radio 1 roadshow. I mean, all those people, and I said in this interview, you know, that I was there during the time when they all thought they were rock stars, and they were. I mean, these people would, in a way, have more people wanting their autograph than some of the top rock stars of the day. And a lot of them had no musical taste whatsoever, knew nothing about music, but it was a different time. Radio 1 wanted rock stars and they got them with massive egos. But I was lucky because I was there with great broadcasters like Roger Scott, who, in my opinion, is the greatest all-time DJ almost ever.
I was friends with his son, who passed away, it turns out, a few years ago. His son passed away.
Star.
I used to do kung fu with his son and I would go round to his house when I was like 14, 15 years old. 13, 14, and Roger was there. I didn't have a clue who he was.
I didn't
think anything of these Beach Boys albums on the wall signed by Dennis and Brian. And didn't think any of that. I just went around to play video games. And then a few years later, when Roger died, it's like, oh, God, I was in his house. Yeah. The legend, you know, one of the greatest broadcasters.
But I was there. You see, he was a non-ego, as was Alan Freeman.
Yeah.
Thoroughly nice man. So I was very lucky, dear listener, that I was there when by the time I got to do my show, all those big egos had been blown down the loo and had gone away. So it was a more pleasant time for me than it was for perhaps some others who were serious about their music.
Alan, I hope that answers at least one of your questions.
Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, Alan. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much for calling.
Speaking of egos, James Whale finishes at 10, but he... And you were telling me that you haven't worked with him. before. No. But he was saying, when I came in, I said, oh, we've got Robbie Vincent coming in. He said, oh. And he was saying that when he was the DJ at Top Shop, were you a DJ in a shop?
No, that's... I thought this was some guy who'd wandered in off the street accusing me of doing terrible things. And, of course, it was the very handsome James Whale.
Yes.
I wasn't. He seemed... I wasn't a DJ till after I'd spent a lot of years on the Evening Standard.
Yeah.
So, no, I never DJ'd in a shop.
OK. Well, listen, let's take a quick break, then we'll come back. We'll talk about the...
Will we be back? Or is this...
This is it. We're done. Thanks for coming in. That was... we'll be back. I want to know more. 0340... And we've got George in Hampstead coming up to talk to you.
Oh, George. What's the phone? Give me the phone number. I'd love to do the phone number for you.
This
is something I used to have to remember. And hang on a minute. He's writing it down for me. Now, dear listener, get involved. Don't be shy. 0344 499 1000. And if you don't call, you're in big trouble.
The Late Night Alternative with Ian Lee. On air and off the leash. On Talk Radio.
That's a story we all want to hear.
Hang on. Gosh, that timing with the red light and the microphones going live was perfect, Sam. Thank you.
Can I just say in reaction to that we're not going to discuss any further? We've heard that before.
Robbie Vincent is here in studio with us. You know, the innovator in terms of phone-in radio. A big soul. Head, soul DJ, tell me how you got started with soul music.
I often get asked this, and I think I had the thing about music is that everybody has their own favourites, and everybody still, it doesn't matter what year, what decade in recent times that is. If you go around somebody's house, they want to play you something they love.
Yeah, of course.
Whether it be a classical piece, a reggae tune, and all of us, we've all got favourite tunes, which we would love somebody else to hear because we love them. Mm. And me, I thought, oh, it would be lovely, wouldn't it, to be able to share my guess as to what people might like as a big room. Mm. So a big room in my house, and they give me a radio transmitter. And that's what attracted me to playing music. Plus, I admired what was going on pirate radio. Mm. I grew up in that time. And also, I used to listen to, in the old days, the Americans were based in Germany, and one of the few outlets of popular music was Radio Feidenberg, which was really a pain, because it kept disappearing in and out and you couldn't hear it. And it was better than that. It was the American Service Broadcast had a station in Berlin.
Okay.
I think it was Berlin. Anyway, you could hear it in the UK. And of course...
What year is this? Are we talking roughly?
Oh, 1852.
Okay, all right. So a while ago.
But in the 60s, I suppose it must have been. Or before, and of course they'd be playing all this stuff. We say this is great, you know, like everything from the blues to soulful stuff. And I think that's where I heard it. And then of course you get the Steely Dans, and you get the Bridges into Soul. And I had a friend who was a huge soul. So all of this, I think, it's a mixture of all that. And again, BBC London, which nobody listened to whatsoever. Mm. Allowed me to learn how to be a DJ.
On air.
This is true. And I started off by playing the Rod Stewarts and the Slade and all the very popular things.
Yeah.
And used to Nick Roscoe's hits as well. He used to get all these great exclusives on Radio 1. I had a right-hand man who would record them, and as soon as he'd finished playing it, I'd have it on air. And so I had all these great exclusives. Anyway, and I gradually introduced some jazz and some soul in the last hour, and then the programme, because nobody noticed, became all soul and jazz. And I actually, this is true as well, I didn't realise how popular it was till I stopped doing it.
Right.
And people said, oh, you know, we used to go straight down. The record shops did. They'd have a stampede of people going in with something I played, saying, have you got it? Those that were interested in that type of music. But I can never answer that question.
Yeah.
Why did you become a broadcaster?
No, exactly. As it came out, it's like it was a dumb question. I can kind of tell you why. I wanted to be an actor. And I couldn't get any acting work, so I did some stand-up, and then I got a job as a presenter on a TV show, and suddenly I'm a presenter for the last 20 years. That's how. And I was lucky enough that about 15 years ago, the TV work dried up. But back in those days, radio stations were being very, very lazy, and they were getting presenters who'd just been on the TV, thinking, well, if they were on TV, then they can do radio, because radio's easier than TV, which, of course, it isn't. It's a different thing altogether. And I was allowed to... I learned on LBC, actually, pretty
Did
much.
You?
I learned on LBC under David Lloyd. I learned my trade on a Saturday and Sunday night, you know, for just going on and getting it wrong. And David would take me in and go, well, why don't you try this? Why don't you try that? And eventually it kind of clicked. Best job in the world, as you know, doing radio.
I must say, I used to enjoy this time of night.
Yeah.
I wasn't, and LBC stories, I mean, things were desperately tight because it was very competitive. We used to share newspapers.
Yeah?
Yeah, on a station that lived on news and current affairs.
Tell me about it.
And we had to share, and very often someone would have cut a story out. And
Robbie, it still happens.
This is my bugbear. You come in and you go through the papers, and there's a squid.
Well, I mean,
who does that?
I'm being here. I'm in. To me, this is like a shag pile carpet. It really, honestly, in comparison to some of the places
you
I've
want to
been,
see it after Raymond's
luxurious
show.
Shag pile carpet. I mean,
yeah, the lights are down.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure what's been going on the carpet, but I mean...
Shag pile.
Yeah, but seriously, dear listener, it's after 10 o'clock. Yeah, we're allowed to talk about shag pile carpets.
But then, okay, how did you get into radio? Because you say you started out as a proper journalist.
Well, I left the... I was in a... and I didn't drink alcohol, and I was in a pub one night, where lots of the Evening Standard writers and reporters would gather in the pub. And I worked in the old Fleet Street, remember?
Right.
My first job was a tea boy at the People. And I got this job on the Evening Standard. Goodness knows how, but we all need a bit of luck. And I was in the pub one night, and I was looking at the people around me, and I thought, I don't want to get old. I don't want to drink start drinking and get old like this lot. And I'd always had an interest in radio, and I'd been out to Radio Nordsee, which hung around in the rough North Sea for a while after the pirate ships were shut down. And I thought I'd like to get into radio. And I saw an advert for people wanted at BBC London. Mm. And, of course, being a London station, they wanted London people. Well, I was an Evening Standard reporter, so I knew my way around more or less.
Yeah.
Or having been, you know, like... covered the troubles in Belfast and done the Keeler trial and the Cray trial. So I knew my way around a little bit. And I got a job. And I thought, good gracious me, person like me who doesn't speak proper English. Mm. And that's the reason I got the job, I think, because I didn't speak proper English.
A big thing back in those days.
Oh, yes.
With the received pronunciation being the thing. To have someone who spoke like a Londoner was a big deal.
No. Or had an accent.
Yeah.
I mean, the great thing about broadcasting now, I mean, it's great that you hear a Scottish accent, someone from Yorkshire, someone from Devon. I love that. I used to be appalled. I was told by a Radio 1 controller or deputy controller to go away and learn how to speak properly before I got a job on Radio 1.
Wow.
And he'll know who he is. I won't name him Johnny Beerley, but I did go away. And I thought, well, and I didn't really quite understand that.
Yeah.
I didn't see why... you had to fit in to what all those other bozos sounded like. And they had, there was at least one regional accent on there, the Scottish guy who died, Stuart Henry.
Okay, yeah.
But he was very rare, very, very rare in those days.
The token accent.
Most of them had that.
Well,
this is what you need to sound like.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be Barry White. do you want to take a couple of calls? We've got Philip in South Norwood. Philip, you're through to Robbie.
Oh, good evening, Ian, and good evening, Robbie.
How are you, Philip?
Very well indeed, and we've spoken many, many times over the years.
Have we?
Yes.
Yeah. You owe him money, Robbie. Come on, pay up.
I'm going to remind you, Robbie, of two programmes that stayed with me forever. They were the Transatlantic Hookups you did with WMCA
yeah.
and KCBS.
Yep, in San Francisco.
Yes.
Hang on a minute, Philip, because we were talking about this before we came on air. Tell us again about how you got that hookup with an American station. Again, a big deal at the time.
Yeah, Philip, can I take time out and just explain how that happened? Is that okay with you?
You go ahead. That's my phone.
Okay, try and stay awake. Yeah, because you might be the last caller for the rest of the night. Stay away. I discovered that the BBC had a permanent line between London and New York, and this was a news line and was only used when there was a big American news story. And I did a deal with them that I borrowed that line. The agreement was that if a big news story broke, we would just stop broadcasting that particular link up. It never happened. And I got in touch with WMCA. Peter yep. Strauss ran the station, loved yep. the idea, was very kind and very friendly to me. And that's how we did it. And you liked that, did you, Philip?
Oh, yes. I remember the Peter Strauss. And the one I remember, for a personal reason, the KCBS one of the topics you had, and it's still being talked about today, was Doctor Who. Oh. Because Doctor Who was very popular in America.
It was.
And the discussion was who was going to be the next Doctor Who.
Nothing changes, does it?
Nothing does.
Nothing changes.
You're right. And I suggested, I thought something outrageous, let's have an American woman.
Mm. Oh.
And I was reading today that Whoopi Goldberg wanted to do it, but I suggested that it might have a go for Bea Arthur from the Golden Girls. And the reaction from several of the callers was favourable. Oh yes, we'd love that.
You should be running. What a brilliant idea!
Yeah.
You should be running Doctor Who.
So that would be a great casting, Philip. I'm going to have to give you that.
Very good.
And just finally, Robbie, I know you're going to have a lot of calls. I will never ever forget my mother. When I came in from work, I worked on the buses. I would come in about 2 o'clock. And she said to me, oh, she's I've just been listening to Robbie, she said. And she loved your show, Robbie. I'm afraid she's long gone. But she loved your show, and it was a regular highlight of her day.
Oh,
how nice. Thank you. It's nice to talk to you. Thank you for the American link-ups, and thank you very much for the story about Dr.
Robbie and you, Ian.
Thank you, Philip. Take care, mate. Philip's been phoning. Well, he's been phoning me for years and years. Obviously, phoning you years and years ago. Philip
obviously misses everywhere. Me.
Yeah, he does. I'll give him your number. speaking of giving people numbers, Rainbow George from Hampstead. You're through to Robbie Vincent.
Hello there, Robbie. I'm not in Hampstead. I'm in Highgate nowadays.
Sorry. Yes, you've obviously moved up market since we last spoke. I don't blame you getting out of Hampstead and in very posh Highgate. For the benefit of the other dear listener, George, we should understand that you and I go back a long way, and we've had more conversations probably than pints of beer I've ever drunk. Do you think that's possible?
No, I don't think we had that many, but...
still as contrary as ever.
I remember the first one was early in 1985, and I'd recently entered the political arena with a party called Captain Rainbow's Universal Party, and we had a very nice conversation. I think I lost you at the end of it, but...
yeah, it couldn't have been me cutting you off, of course.
No, it was quite a...
Listen, mate, I'll tell you what, we need you back. We really need you back now with this Brexit nonsense. There are two people who could sort it. You're one of them, and the other's Lord Such. Monster raving loony party. Yeah. And that man, I always remember one of his greatest ideas was to use the Butter Mountain as ski slopes.
We formed an alliance together.
You did.
We became the Rainbow Alliance.
But great thinker. Hugely undermined. And he would be good, wouldn't he, at Brexit time?
No, absolutely. Mm. And some of the things he campaigned for actually came into law, like passports for pets and things like that.
Hugely underrated. I'll never forget you, George, and I'll never forget Lord Such as their contribution to British politics. And if only you were both younger, I'd send you over to see that Merkel, and I'd send you into Paris, and they would be so confused, we would end up with the greatest possible deal the world has ever seen.
In our first call, Robbie, I was talking about Britain and Ireland joining together and becoming the Emerald Rainbow Islands, I said at the time. And now, sort of 34 years later or whatever, I'm still saying the same thing. I still think that is what is going to emerge out of all of this, that we'll have our Brexit and then there'll be an Irexit, and Ireland will leave and we'll join together and lead the way to a new European Union that will be wonderful.
We'll have a bridge to Berlin. We'll have a bridge to Paris. We'll just hop on there and get on the Boris bus and a Boris bike and get over there. I tell you what, George, you are a man of a certain age, and this is a very serious question.
78 and a third.
Well, have you had a check from Boris Johnson yet?
No.
Because that huge amount of money on the side of his bus, I thought everybody over 75 would be getting a cheque just to prove that what he was saying was absolutely true. Lovely to talk to you, George.
Thank you, George.
Thank you, George. Very, very much.
0344 499 1000. Let's try Noel Taylor. Good evening, Noel.
Hello, Ian, Kath and Robbie.
Hello, Noel. What have you got for us tonight?
Can I talk about anything?
Can he talk about anything? I guess so, sure.
Yeah, of course you can talk about anything.
Thanks, Robbie.
It's nothing to do with me. I'm just a humble guest.
I've just invented putting mirrors on the light side of the moon in order to create a paradise Earth. Thus, there will be no night. Well, there'll be night only at certain times of the year.
Yes. I've got somebody I'd like you to meet. He invented an idea to do away with bus stop queues. And he was one of the greatest undiscovered geniuses of all time. And you remind me of him. And I just wish he would pick up the phone now.
Lovely something.
And we could put you together. That's fascinating.
Yeah. Why do you want no nighttime? Nighttime's the best time.
Yeah.
That's got you.
Well, thing is, creatures will be able to get used to daylight all of the time.
Yes.
What, even badgers?
Yeah.
Badgers.
Yeah, everything.
But nighttime is fun when it's dark. It's nice. It's sexy. It's exciting. It's naughty. It's what life is about. It's the best time, isn't it?
But you talk about badgers. I mean, imagine doing that, all right, and you're at home all cosy and you've got this protesting badgers outside your house, like about 400 or 500 badgers carrying
big banners
saying, why has this man done away with nighttime when we come out and play? I mean, think of the nighttime. There are a lot of nighttime people. Foxes prefer to come out at night.
Vampires.
Yeah. Thank you, Oliver. And think of all the other people around at night. Night bus drivers.
Night watchmen.
Night watchmen.
What are they going to do?
Oh, I'd like the night watchman, the brazier, to come back. There is nothing like
don't see a brazier anymore.
Oh, there's nothing like a black and white movie and you see those old guys. I lived in a little village and we had one. And we used to torment him, and I've always felt terrible about it.
Yeah.
You know, they weren't there to be tormented.
Well, as a kid, you'd go and bully the night watchman.
No, not bully them, but, you know.
Tease them. Throw things.
Tease them. I mean, right. We didn't do naughty things when I was young.
No.
Just tease. Bring back the brazier. Thank you.
No.
We'll do away with all that nonsense about Mars, or was it the moon?
It was the moon.
And we're going to bring back braziers instead.
There
not braziers, braziers.
Braziers. Thank you very much, Noel. Let's take another call, then we'll take a break, then we'll talk. Good evening, Lawrence.
Greetings.
Oh, greetings, ooh. Lawrence. This is upmarket guest, upmarket caller that we've got. Lawrence, you're through to us and to Robbie. Is anything? What would you like to say?
The great and the mighty Robbie Vincent. Honour talking to you, sir.
Are you a heavy breather or a caller?
I'd rather not talk about that, actually.
Okay.
It's one of those things I do. I mean, you know, times are hard.
Hey, it's Robbie, and it's lovely to speak
to you. As long
as
it's only times that are hard, mate. Let's, come on, focus.
Times are hard, yeah. What did you want to mention?
I just wanted to say that to Ian that he has a new studio, one of the best funk DJs anywhere.
Oh, I agree with that.
Oh, there we go. Yeah, Oliver, I didn't know you were a funk DJ.
I'm just his son.
Oh, yes. Back in his Jazz FM days. And,
thank you.
That's... I first discovered him on LBC all those years ago. But he was, you know, a proper talk radio station.
Very good. Thank you. It's very flattering and very kind.
Are you a funk fan, Lawrence? Because I'm going to be honest, I don't know a lot about funk. I'm not a huge funk fan. The bits I've heard, I like. Look at you. Are you raising your eyebrows?
No, no, not at all.
But I don't know a lot about. Are you a funk fan, Lawrence?
I like funk. I like jazz. You know.
Give me some funk songs and artists. Let's get deep. Let's hear some deep cuts.
Oh, Frankie, now you're asking. George Benson. There you go.
George Benson.
You know George Benson?
I know George Benson.
Jazz funk. Yep.
There's a man rooted in jazz, in straight ahead jazz. Interesting choice. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
John Scofield. Jazz guitarist.
Yep.
Does a little funk as well.
Does he know his stuff? Is Lawrence passing the test?
John Scofield doesn't quite fit in. He fits into the jazz bit, definitely. Yeah. What Bobby about George Clinton?
It's vocal, isn't it, George Clinton?
Well, no. He was a serious musician, not a jazz musician. He did one of my all-time favourite tracks, because he could be completely mad. No. And I interviewed him when he was sane. He was absolutely on the money. Atomic Dog. Oh. Dogs of the World Unite. Do you remember? Do you know that? Atomic Dog. No, you don't know that?
I'm afraid not.
He wrote that. I'll tell you why he wrote that. I'm a real student of what helps people write a song. Yes. And he was if you could picture it, he was on the veranda of his house. It was hot, and his dog was out, and it was really hot. And he had a cat. Mm-hmm. And the dog was so knackered, it wouldn't chase the cat. It was that hot. And he observed this in his rocking chair. And if you listen to Atomic Dog, there's a line in it which says something like, "Why doesn't the dog chase the cat?" And that was part of Atomic Dog. And that was how he saw and wrote that particular... Well, people don't call it a song, but I think it was
Atomic Dog. Well, here it is. This is it.
Oh, wonderful. Atomic Dog.
Dog panting.
Modern funk, isn't it, really? It's the 80s.
Sorry, Lawrence?
That's a sort of 80s sound of funk, isn't it, really?
Yeah, yes, I agree with you. It is very, very dated. He was a wonderful character. He still is a wonderful character. And it's just... just thinking about that, I mentioned before we came on air, I was talking to Ian, as I do, and I was mentioning knowing about why and where songs came from. Mm. And do you know, have you ever heard of Me and Mrs. Jones by Billy Paul?
Yes.
Well, that was written by Gamble and Huff, those that ran Philadelphia International, and were massively important because they took Motown a stage on, fantastic artists, fantastic producers. They used to go for coffee downstairs from their office. They used to go there almost every morning, sit and have coffee. And they noticed, and it was observation again, it was observation like George Clinton noticed his dog wouldn't chase the cat because it was really hot. They used to notice, and his words, this is not being... chauvinist, but a pretty woman used to come in.
Oh, yes.
Pretty young woman, their words, and sit down. And not long after, this well-dressed city gentleman used to turn up and sit opposite her. And they saw these two on a regular basis and thought, well, they were probably getting it together, but they couldn't actually be sure. And if you listen to the song Me and Mrs. Jones, There's Something Going On, that's where that song came from.
Wow.
And the other one that Kenny Gamble told me about was they were in Jamaica, and they went there, and they used to go there on a fairly regular basis to write songs. And when you write songs or you write books, you need to be out of your comfort zone. You need to be somewhere where you're not going to get a phone call. Well, Jamaica's a good place to go in the 70s. You wouldn't get a phone call because the phones didn't work. And also the power kept going off.
Yeah.
Okay, and they were writing a song and the power went off yet again and they couldn't see anything. And that's where Turn Off the Lights for Teddy Pendergrass came from.
Wow.
That inspired them writing that song.
Wow. There you go. Thank you, Robbie. Thank you, Lawrence.
One more question for Robbie. If
go on.
What do you think of bands like, Jamiroquai and so forth? I honestly think it's a bit of an insult to call them funk, because the rhythm is far too, straight, 4-4, kind of square.
Now, this guy's got beef with Jamiroquai. What do you think? Are we allowed to call Jamiroquai funk?
I mean, you know, you're
holding on to it for a long time.
I've never called Jamiroquai funk. I mean...
Yeah. They call them funk for some reason, you know.
Well, I don't mind if they call Jamiroquai. When I see him, I say, do you mind being called funk? And see what he says.
Yeah.
I mean, he is on the soulful side, that beat, that rhythm, but I'm not absolutely sure I'd call him a genuine funkster.
Wasn't he more like acid jazz?
Is he acid jazz? Don't know.
He's definitely
more that way.
He's definitely dance.
Yeah, dance music. But people dance to Nat King Cole.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not sure. I won't.
20 years after the event, we're arguing over how you'd classify Jamiroquai. Time for a quick break. 03444991000. This is Talk Radio.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Excuse me.
Oh, Dad.
Hello, I'm Martin Kellner.
And I'm his daughter, Ruthie.
We do a podcast. It's called Ruthie, Me and My Dad.
In which I tell him how he's wrong about most things.
And I explain to her who the Bee Gees were. It's on Acast and Apple Podcasts.
And all your favourite podcast providers.
It's a unique generation gap conversation between a baby boomer dad
and his Generation Z daughter.
That's Ruthie, Me and My Dad. Brand new episodes every Thursday.
Moonlit musings for mums, madams, and meat packers.
Oh, never mind, I must have misheard.
The Late Night Alternative with Ian Lee.
The station's brilliant.
On Talk Radio.
The Late Night Alternative, weeknights from 10 on Talk Radio. You can listen on DAB, you can download the app, or you can go to talkradio.co.uk. Catherine is here, Robbie Vincent is here, and I'm guessing Brodie is listening via the website, because Brodie has tweeted... Managed to find you, Robbie, streaming live into Hot Springs, Arkansas.
No.
Yes.
No.
It's Arkansas.
It's Arkansas.
It's not Arkansas.
Okay.
Because Arkansas would have a W at the end.
I mean, that sounds logical. Oh, okay, whatever.
Arkansas. How would you say that, Robbie?
I'd say Arkansas. But
you're out of practice a little bit, with respect.
Yeah. I've never heard of Arkansas, but I've heard of Arkansas.
Okay, well, you're learning stuff, both of you, which is good. Great to hear Robbie's voice again. I miss his Sunday morning show on Jazz FM.
That's very nice. Hiya, Brodie. I trust you well. I think, do you know what? Brodie used to live in Canada.
Really? Do you remember?
Because Brodie's such an unusual name.
Yeah.
I think Brodie lived in Canada. I think.
Brodie? Tweet us. Let us know.
I think he did.
Let us know. Did I hear you correctly? Something you said about 20 minutes ago. Were you in court when the Crays were on trial?
I covered the Cray trial, yeah.
Wow.
I was. You've got to remember, I was 19-ish, very young.
Yeah.
And I developed one of my jobs as a little reporter was to sit outside Christine Keeler's flat waiting for her to be arrested. That's how I got to know Christine Keeler in inverted commas. Yeah. Just some of the things that did. And I used to sit on a dustbin outside her flat in Devonshire Street, which is in Marylebone, outside a bookshop. And I was at the sort of age when I smoked, so I coughed. And often when you smoke, one of the things you pick up, bronchitis and all sorts of horrible bugs. And her maid felt sorry for me because I was only a kid. So she used to give me a sandwich and a cup of tea, invite me up in the morning. So she was under contract to the News of the World, and the News of the World knew exactly what she was doing, and she wasn't allowed to talk to anybody. But I knew exactly what she was doing because she used to tell me. And then when I went to the Evening Standard, the next thing which I remember clearly, it was a team of us who did the background on the craze. And that meant going round. And I got to know, again, because I was fairly young, I think they took pity on me. I got to know an aunt and uncle quite well, who told me a lot about them as kids in the East End. Wow. And them playing outside when bombs were dropping. And got to chat with his mum as well about my dear boys, which I used to, even then as a kid, a young man, I chuckled about inside. And going back to Christine Keeler, I told her that Profumo was dead. And it made me think about some of the terrible things that you did as a journalist. I take no pride in that whatsoever. And being a bit more mature, I think, how on earth did I climb up those stairs to her flat, knock on the door and tell her Profumo was dead?
Wow.
And I also told there was a guy, for those of you in the North, T. Dan Smith, who was Mr. Powerful in the North in construction. I told him he was going to be arrested. He said, "I'll come in and have a cup of tea." I mean, it was as if I was an old mate who dropped in. And the other interesting one, and again, I was thinking about this the other day, is I told Ian Paisley that there was the IRA were going to kill him. They'd threatened him with death, and I knocked on his door and told him that. And in retrospect, again, and I just did it. Mm. And when you asked about moving from print journalism into broadcast journalism, I think there was a bit of that in it as well. There was something I was...
What, regret? Shame?
I was uncomfortable. And it was even tougher when I worked for agencies and was part of the team that broke news of the first heart transplant in the UK. And I was very proud to be part of that team and reading The Guardian about how they wondered how we found out about it, how we knew about it, because we actually had a photographer there when the guy that was going to have the heart transplant came into the National Heart Hospital, again, interestingly enough, in Marylebone. But they're sort of things to be more proud of. But in those days, it was tough because no story in the paper, no wages. Mm. As simple as that. And you were sort of on, you had to make the agency survive. So it's so important for us to get the first picture of the victim of a murder,
so you have
for
to be
instance,
ruthless and kind of put your conscience to one side.
Yeah, she
if you
did.
Were going to get food
and
on
come
the
up
table.
With dirty tricks in phone boxes because we didn't have mobile phones, yeah. and putting boxes out of order ish, sort of, or making them uncomfortable to be in.
What do you mean?
Well, if there was only two phone boxes in the village, right. And you wanted to ensure yours was the story that got on the news desk first, you would hope, wouldn't you, that one of the phone boxes was out of order. Often they would be.
Wow.
So when somebody said, "Where are the phones?" you sent them to the phone that was out of order,
yeah.
And you hopped into the one that
Look
was working.
That. Isn't that incredible?
I'm not suggesting I went round damaging them or...
Can we have you for another 20 minutes? Is that all right? Or have you got
well,
to shoot
let
off?
Me, no, let me ask myself, Oliver, can I stay up for another 20 minutes at least? What do you think?
Of course.
Yeah.
You sure? No, well, yeah, you sure?
He won't cook for me, but it is dark, but he will take me home. Make sure I go.
No,
yeah, listen, look,
I'm
a dear listener. I don't know if you can hear it in my voice. I'm really enjoying this. It's like being back on proper radio, talking to proper people. It's really lovely, and I'm happy to stay here for as long as I'm invited. How about that?
Sounds like a deal. Lovely.
Can I have the hat for the want the money? We don't take checks, Oliver and I.
0344 499 1000. 0344 499 1000. If you're listening to us, I know we've got a load of new listeners tonight because you want to hear Robbie. It doesn't cost you a penny. You phone up, you speak to Sam. He takes your name and number and gives you a call straight back. It's as simple as that, and then you get on the air. That's how we do it.
Don't be shy.
Do not be shy, for crying out loud. This is the Late Night Alternative. Ian Lee, Catherine Boyle, and tonight we've got Robbie Vincent. This is Talk Radio.
Tales of mystery and imagination on the radio show that does things differently.
Dolly Parton, I listen to her records all day long.
The Late Night Alternative with Ian Lee.
I'm a nut job, but not that kind of nut job.
On Talk Radio.
Honest to God, it's the new Breaking Bad.
Oh, no.
Dear listener, Late Night Alternative, Ian Lee, Catherine Boyle, and Robbie Vincent is here, and his son Oliver, who's keeping very quiet. But then afterwards, when we go to the breaks, saying, oh, coming out with funny lines, we said, chuck them in, man.
I should try and get more involved.
We've spent the last 5 minutes trying to remember the word osteopath.
Yes, we did. That's
and
true.
We got there. Go on, you made a mistake. And you're...
Yeah, I'm very, very grateful to a dear listener who was kind enough and sweet enough to contact us and say that I said telling Christine Keeler that the wrong person was dead, and of course it was Stephen Ward, if you remember, those of you who remember the trial and the whole case, who was an osteopath. It was I told Christine Keeler he was dead, not Profumo, and I'm very grateful for the dear listener. And if listen,
well done, Mum.
If any of us need correcting, please, where's that phone number again that you wrote down? If we need get something wrong, because it's been a busy life, particularly for me, 0344 499 1000. I've been invited to stay a little bit longer, and I'd love to hear from you, whether in Canada or Australia. Is Australia waking up a bit? Yeah. Good morning. How are you?
Robbie, here's the thing, though. This is it's 2019. Facts don't matter anymore. You could look, fake news, lies, you can say whatever you want.
Just say it like you mean it.
Just say it and stick with it. You don't need to apologise and put out actual facts.
Yeah, but yes, okay. But I'm old school, very old school, aren't I?
You are. Well, I couldn't possibly comment.
Yeah, but I am old school because, you know, I deal in facts and I'm very interested in facts.
Barry, stay there. We'll come to you in a second. You mentioned the issues you had with being a journalist and how the dirty tricks didn't sit comfortably with you. And we were talking before you came on air about when you were doing a late night phone-in show, and we owe you so much, man. This show wouldn't exist. We say me and Kath listened to some old clips of your phone-in show. It sounded very, very similar to this. You know that you mentioned the bus ticket guy. Dear listener, go on. I say dear listener like you do as well. Go on YouTube, Robbie Vincent, bus ticket. It's just glorious, and it would sit perfectly.
I wonder if he's still... I often wonder what else he's invented.
Yes.
I mean, you just talking about it. I can remember it so well.
Yeah, it is under Robbie Vincent Corpses on YouTube.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. And how many... And lots of people are something like...
I've listened about 84 times.
Have you?
Yeah, very much.
And you're my son.
I know.
Wow.
It's a great clip. But you mentioned as well, which is not a thing I've always done, but in the last 10 years, I'm following this philosophy, and it makes, makes things so much nicer and better and more entertaining, I think, of... When you do a late-night phone-in show, you quite often get people who are on the fringes of society phoning in. And they might have drug and alcohol issues. They might have mental health issues. They might just be very lonely. They might, I think the callers to late-night radio are the most interesting callers you can get. And your philosophy was never to take the mick. You can have a cough. It was never to take the mick, was never to laugh. It was always a lot more generous than that, wasn't it?
My philosophy was I laughed with, never at, and I never took the mick. I've heard it happen, and I've often felt, and I'm a pacifist, absolutely, but I've often, when I hear that happening and someone is being taken advantage of, a dear caller, I've felt like I wish I had a long hand that could get my hand round the... presenter who's taking the Sir Michael because it's not necessary. Yeah. And I'm pleased to hear it's your philosophy too.
Yeah, it wasn't
and
always.
It
I came from a...
We all learn.
We do. I came from...
We all learn.
My first TV show was a thing
Arkansas.
Called... The 11 o'clock show. Arkansas.
We'll never learn.
Was... The first TV show I did was mean. It was funny, but it was mean, you know. And I kind of thought for a long time, oh, people want me to be mean. And I carried that over into the, when I started doing radio. And it took a couple of years, but then I got... Actually, it may not get as many listeners being kinder and being more generous and sympathetic and empathetic, but it's the right way to go, isn't it?
It's Aretha Franklin. It's respect.
Yes. Now, speaking of Aretha Franklin, Marvin Gaye, it's a little bit of a quantum leap there. You interviewed Marvin Gaye and said he was... Well, you said he was off his nut. I think we can say that legally.
Well,
we know he had drug issues.
Yeah, he wasn't off his nut as such, but he was definitely under the influence of something that made you sniff.
Right.
And,
could have been Vicks.
Yeah, but I have to say my research suggests it might have been cocaine.
Okay.
And he kept going like that. And he was a bit out of it. But the thing that changed all that was when I asked him what he would like to come back as after he died.
Yeah.
And I know it's a bit of a... On a music show, it's probably quite a deep thing to ask, but it worked.
You got him.
It actually got through that haze of whatever cocaine... is or whatever haze he was in, having not slept for 4 weeks, whatever it was. And he said, and I saw him, it sort of woke him up as such, and he got in touch with himself. And he said he'd like to come back as Giant Redwood Tree. And then you saw him thinking about the tree. And I said, why would you want, you know, why do you want to be a great wood? He said, so I can look down, because it's a massive tree.
Yeah.
And so I can look down on people and watch them go by. And that's a writer's artist type of thing. And you sort of, that was the real Marvin Gaye.
Yeah.
Because what a talent, hey? What a waste.
You're such a talent in terms of the songwriting and the voice. I mean, such a voice. And the sad thing is, he was just getting clean. He was just sorting himself out when he got shot by his dad, you know, with a gun. I think he bought his dad as a present, if I've got the story right.
I think you remember correctly.
Yeah, yeah. And he was just, because there's a really weird documentary about him when he was just absolutely blasted on drugs and couldn't take any more. And he moved to I think, Belgium. He moved to, was it Bruges or something?
Or Amsterdam or around about
Ostend
there.
Ostend or something.
That's right. He went between Belgium and Holland. That's right. And you remember really well.
I remember seeing this documentary years ago.
For a non-soul boy. He's got a good memory.
I like a bit of Marvin. And it's fascinating.
He's not a real funker, you know.
He went and...
Say again?
No, please don't. we got away with it once. I don't know if he could do it again. And he went and stayed with his family, and he got clean, and he went out jogging, and he got fit, and he put on a couple of concerts, and he was like, I'm ready, I'm back, and then went back to the madness that was his death, unfortunately. A waste, terrible waste.
Terrible waste, yeah.
We got Barry on the line. Good evening, Barry.
Hi, Ian. Hi, Rob. It's great to hear you on the radio again.
It's nice of you to call. I'd get very lonely.
I remember in the early days of... I used to love Radio London... And in the early days, it was only on what they used to call VHF, 95.3. Do you remember that?
Before? Yes,
I'm not sure if you were there then.
Yeah, I was, because that's the reason I was able to actually learn to broadcast, because nobody was listening. I would say the peak audience was probably 10. and most of those were relations of people who worked there. Yeah. And because of it, and again, we ought to explain, lots of people who have no idea what you're talking about. VHF is a method of broadcasting. It's a way of doing it. But you need a radio that received it. And of course, there were, the major difficulty was people didn't have radios with VHF on it.
Mm.
And it's quite, you know, for us to change from full cream milk to semi-skimmed takes a lot of doing. Well, it's the same sort of thing with radio stations and the way they broadcast. Like digital, this is a digital station. Persuading people to change to digital is not easy. And we're not there yet. Anyway, I'm interrupting you.
No, that's all right.
No, carry on, please.
Right. But I remember there was some really boring show in the morning. I mean, some of their shows, let's face it, they weren't Sony broadcast winners. And there was a show in the morning, I think it was some about local politics. And I rang up on the show, and I spoke. I was on for ages. I suppose there were no other callers.
You were the only listener.
Probably, yeah. And then I went for a walk in a shopping centre where I used to live in Edgware, and I thought everybody would stop me who knew me. Oh, I heard you on the radio, Barry.
Brilliant.
Alas, not a single person heard me.
No.
Barry, what were you talking about on the radio?
Well, it was very boring. It was this was my first call on the radio. It was about local politics. About rates in the
rates. I remember you. Where were you calling from at the time?
I think it was before your time, Ian.
Oh, yeah. Well, God bless you for that. I've already had Robbie call me a young man.
I think you felt a tease coming on.
A sneaky little one.
I have to say, your subject matter, talking about rats, was it rats or rent?
Rates.
All the same, rats, rents, rate. I mean, how boring can you get? And I suppose what it really did was, because the programme was so bad, you thought, it can't get any worse if I ring up. And that's what you need. Often, I'm being serious now, often when things are a bit dull, you need somebody like you to come on and zip-zap, off you go. You know, it's all about the caller, the quality of your call. And broadcasters, and particularly in phone-in radio, which I do know a little bit about, I have to say, it's the quality of your callers match the quality of your presenter. Hence, Ian only gets brilliant people. And with great ideas like streetlights on the moon, the other side of the moon, and some of the other wonderful ideas we get from Rainbow George, for instance, and from you, who just make phone radio. It's great.
Robbie, could I just ask you something?
Yes.
You used to do 10 to 1 at night.
Yes.
And at lunchtime, it was a great Dave Simmons.
Yes.
But sometimes you used to switch, didn't you? You did lunchtime one and he did the night.
No, we got rid of him. He went into an old people's home in Bournemouth when he was 32.
Yeah, sure.
And David Simmons, an interesting man. He was he worked for Papa Doc's lot in Haiti as a translator.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, wow. And I went to see him in hospital at a... where you used to go, isolation hospital that used to be near Lewisham, and he was in there. And I think it's where he picked up some horrible bug. And David was also a London tour guide. And I haven't spoken to him for about 10 years. Very bright man.
Yes.
Not a very good soul broadcaster.
I
will tell you a story about Dave Simmons. Before I was a soul broadcaster, he used to listen to the first track on an album, and I said, well, don't you listen to the whole? Oh no, he said, the best track's always the first track. That was sometimes true. I didn't. I listened to the whole album. I listened to both sides, and I spent hours. I would drive people mad. I had it on in my car, had it on at home, and I would listen through it all, because very often buried away in somebody's piece of work was the gem, not the first track. And thank you for mentioning Dave Simmons, because I think he doesn't get mentioned enough.
But you know something? It's something about Dave Simmons I do remember. He caused a bit of a scandal, because... I remember in the time... Well, he used to do what he called a personal problem open line.
Yes, he did.
Which was between... what hours did he do? Was it something like...
I can't... But he
two?
Did. Yes, he did. Right. And he used to eat. He used to have someone come... used to have... and this annoyed me. And he used to eat when a caller came. So somebody would come on and say, look, I've got this awful growth and I feel terrible. And this distressed person is on the phone. And Animal House at the other end is eating.
Animal House.
munch. And I used to seethe.
Yeah.
It didn't make me... I never wanted to slap David, but had I been a more experienced broadcaster, I would have banned him from eating on air. Lovely to talk to you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Robbie.
Thank you, Barry.
Dear listener, you get a real proper welcome here.
0344 499 1000. One of the great skills, and again, it took me a while to learn it. It's obvious once you know it, but is actually listening to what they say. The number I used to phone up Mike Dickin and prank call Mike Dickin.
Did you?
And I like Mike Dickin a lot. It's a terrible loss that he's not here. But quite often on some nights, you could hear that he was bored and he wasn't listening.
No, he was bored.
And his mind would be elsewhere. And so you could phone him up and you could kind of just say stuff. And he goes, what did you say? And you just carry on and then he'd drift off again and you'd say something else. And what I get from listening to the clips I've been listening to today is you listened.
Yeah.
Isn't it? But
it could be hard work for Mike because he was on LBC. I saw his switchboard.
Right.
And that man, I admire the way he just talked to himself for 10, 15, 20 minutes. There were no callers.
Right.
Absolutely. Because it was a terrible, terrible time.
What slot was he doing at LBC?
He was on sort of 7 to 10-ish or 7 till 9. And I think he was on AM only as
right,
well.
Right, OK.
There used to be an FM. By the way, the technical talk, as you know, can imagine, I'm a real technophobe. I can't even open my own front door. But I am a technophobe. And AM is another method of broadcasting, like digital is an FM. And LBC used to have News Talk on one channel and LBC on the other. And nobody phoned News Talk. And poor Mike Dickin.
Yeah.
I actually drove past the spot where he got killed, you know.
Really?
Yeah.
It's a shame.
Terrible shame.
It is a shame.
Terrible shame. He was a complete motoring nut.
Yeah.
He loved cars. It was... There's a word for it, isn't there, that he got killed like that. I was stunned.
Oh, it's horrendous. It's horrendous. Stunned. And do you know what? It was the anniversary not that long ago, and we kind of did, not special, but we kind of played a few clips of him and a few people phoned in. In fact, Mark, who was tech-hopping for us that night by coincidence,
used to work with him
at LBC, didn't he?
Well, he'll know how...
Not him, he's a boy.
Not the very young one. This is an example of child labour.
Oh, poor Sam.
You wait till I get outside this studio, back into the streets. You wait till you read the headlines tomorrow.
He's too
Robbie
big for
Vincent,
the
back in form. He discovers child labour. Child found at... It radios. I won't do that to you.
You'll have a hard time finding a phone box.
0344 499 1000, dear listener. We've got Robbie for a few more minutes. So if you want to give him a call, don't look at the clock. If you want to give him a call, you'd be very, very welcome to. Otherwise, we'll just carry on having a little geeky chat before we send him home. This is the Late Night Alternative, Ian Lee and Catherine Boyle, weeknights from 10 on Talk Radio.
The radio show that knows truth is always stranger than fiction.
Week Monday, I get shoes.
The Late Night Alternative with Ian Lee.
Because they're too real to be part of my imagination.
On Talk Radio.
Talking about Tony Blackburn and that, what a worker he is.
Oh gosh, isn't
hard
he?
Hard worker. And then a red light came on.
So we'll stop.
He has to stop and give other people a chance, that guy.
He won't. He can't.
Well, he needs to. He can't carry on working like that. That's unfair on a lot of young talent and a lot of people. Listen, we got Robbie for another 10 minutes or so, then we're gonna boot him out.
I'm just looking up the bus timetable to make sure.
You don't
Silver's
need to do that,
night
I'll sort
bus.
You out.
Oh, right. Okay.
She'll give you a backy on her bike. So 0344 499 1000. And then, Robbie, this is what we're thinking of doing when you go maybe. Is you we've both got... You would have had banned callers on your show. Just callers that were either rude or...
Yeah, not banned with a capital B, but no. For instance, discouraged from being too regular.
Right.
But there were, we would weed out those who we knew were likely to offend.
Yes.
In and that isn't being controversial. There's a difference between being controversial and offending.
Yeah.
And there were people who would come on effing and blinding and being anti-Semitic, anti-black and all the rest, and just do it because that's what they thought was funny. Mm. I didn't. Sorry, I interrupted.
No, you didn't.
Sure, show.
No, it's no. Listen, it's honestly, it's such a thrill to have you here, mate. Honestly, I hope you're enjoying it as much as we are. But no, I ask you. But we're kind of thinking when you go, of we've got a few callers that are banned. We are thinking, we are toying with the idea of for the rest of the show, lifting the ban. One of them's calling in now. John from Highbury is calling in now. I won't take him now. But
how do you get yourself in this box? What did you call it? A troll box?
Troll box. Box of trolls, yeah. Troll box.
Box of trolls. Okay. How could I... What would I need to do to get myself in your troll box?
John, who's calling in, told me I should kill myself.
Oh, I don't think that's very friendly.
It's not very friendly, is it?
No. I wouldn't tolerate that. I mean...
But maybe, here's the thing, I like to think...
I might have been feeling sad that day.
I was feeling sad.
Cut me and I bleed.
But I like to think the best of people. I like
me
to think
too.
That people can change and people can learn and people can grow. I've grown. I'm not the guy that I was 10 years ago.
What about builders, though?
Sorry?
Could you forgive builders?
If they do a terrible job.
Have you ever had building work done?
I have had building work done.
Did you survive it?
I did, but it was really, really stressful. There was a builder and an...
No!
Yes, it was. I had a builder and an architect arguing about what was going on, and I had to...
Let's quickly... plumbers? What were you going to ask me?
I kicked a plumber out of the house once for did taking you? The piss, yes.
Let me think of...
was the toilet broken?
I'm just thinking of other trades. But like, go on, what were you going to ask me?
I've got no idea.
No. You're thinking of... I was asking you, how could I get into your troll box? And then we were talking about I had people that I did not want on because they would just come on to be anti-Semitic, anti-black or something. I'm not having it. But if it was somebody coming on in conversation and it was a conversation, a sharing of ideas, a looking at attitudes in a reasonable way, that's different.
Okay.
And I didn't have a very big band list, about 200,000, I suppose, something like that.
Rico says, I'm having a freak out. I said to my wife 10 minutes ago, I wonder what happened to Robbie Vincent. I came on, switched on the radio, and you were there.
People think I'm dead.
I'm still not sure.
I'm absolutely positive. but it is true.
Yeah.
People do. And just because you haven't been broadcasting for a while, they do think you're dead.
You stop existing.
Yes.
TV, because you've done a lot of TV as well, and TV more so.
Yeah.
Because if you're not, we're such a visual generation. If you're not on the telly, well, then you cease to exist.
That's right.
And some people will then discover you on the radio. You did quite a few big TV shows. We were talking about the one I remember, Go For It. You hosted a fitness show.
And the reason they asked me to do that was because I was doing a phone-in show, and one of the things was you would need to be able to relate to families and ask good questions and all the stuff. So that's why I got the job. I also got it because I was fat and smoked.
Yeah.
And this was all about fitness, and they thought I'd lose weight and stop smoking. The programme was so stressful, I smoked even more and got fatter. Not quite.
You went for it.
No, but, not quite. They did have an effect on
me. A big show. You were saying it was getting like 10, 12 million.
Oh, no, about 5 million.
5 million, okay, sorry.
Hospital Watch, what I then went on to do, was getting massive audiences.
Right.
Just ridiculous figures. Mm. But it was a good show, well produced. Very well
and,
produced.
Of course, I'm sure people will say, you should get back on the radio. And, of course...
Well,
tonight's
given me
it
doesn't work. But I must say, tonight's given me a real taste.
Oh,
you know?
Has your appetite whetted?
Yeah, I've sort of in my own sweet way enjoyed myself, and I take quite a lot to cheer. You know,
what did because we have been talking for ages about trying to get you on, and it didn't happen, and then we were so thrilled when you got back in touch saying, "Still up for this?" Because I think I'd like it. Were you apprehensive about coming in? Did you think it was going to be? I was talking to Oliver before about you, quite often you get these awards, Lifetime Achievement Award, which means basically you're probably going to die soon. So yes, we're going to give
that's
you
the
a,
end of your talent sort of that's, thing.
Yeah, we're going to give you a statuette. Spent. You know, I did I'm a Celebrity, which is kind of putting your hand up saying my career's over. I'd like another 6 months, please. Were you nervous? Were you unsure about coming in tonight? What you were going to feel, the emotions you were going to feel, how you're going to be treated?
What a good question. How did I feel? I didn't feel apprehensive because I didn't think I was going into the lion's den. Mm. I think that's the way. And if you're not in the lion's den, you're going to be given a fair crack of the whip. And I thought, this is an honourable man and this is an honourable woman. I think I'm safe in their studio, I thought. And had I not been, I would have gone home.
Mm.
I did ask you how you felt about coming in. You just said, well, it's what I do, isn't it? You know,
it's what I do.
Very nonchalant.
But I could go
it.
Home, couldn't I? You could upset me and I could go home.
Can I upset? Well, I don't know how I could upset you. I don't know what I could say to
I'm
upset
quite,
you.
I'm quite thick stick. It's quite thick skin.
Wet spoon in the sugar jar. That's...
Robbie, it's been so nice meeting you, mate. Thank
oh,
you
yeah,
so much.
Oh, yeah, am I going now?
Yeah, you're done.
Oh, okay. All right.
Thank you. Get out of my studio.
Thank you. Thank you very much for inviting me. Really enjoyed it. And thank you to Oliver as well to come along.
Yeah, thank you, mate. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Look after me.
We've had a thrill. You're welcome back anytime you want.
That's very good.
We're going to carry on the show in a little bit, but we're going to play a little bit of music while we escort this gentleman off the premises and check his pockets and frisk him to make sure that there are no souvenirs taken. Thanks so much for your time, Robbie. I genuinely, it's an absolute thrill for us tonight.
Dear listener, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, there we go. This is Talk Radio.
Across the UK, online and on DAB. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio. Blast.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy ad free. That's amazon.com/comedy ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Rhetoric from the Banana Republic for people who think capital punishment isn't going nearly far enough.
Join me, the Reverend Mike Graham. Revolutionary, rebellious, rebuilt, rebranded.
Dangerous mid-morning debate with the great dictator.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham.
Tomorrow morning from 10
on Talk Radio.
Kick off your slippers. Don't go to bed. The party is just starting.
You can sleep when you're dead. The Late Night Alternative with Ian Lee on Talk Radio.